Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on November the 11th, 2015. I'm Y-Rot alongside Rolo T. It's time to start the show. What's going on, man?
It was a different opening than we usually do.
A little bit different.
The order of words was strange and new to me, and I'm uncomfortable with it, Nick. It's like a red cup at Starbucks. I'm not entirely comfortable with this, so I'm going to create a few Reddit posts, see if I can't change a reaction to this.
As someone who never goes to Starbucks, I don't care about that at all.
Well, yeah, but, you know, somebody
It's one of those things that's been twisted into a war on Christmas thing, right?
I think so. I guess it's like a red cup, and people are like...
It doesn't say Merry Christmas on it, therefore it is a Happy Holidays thing, therefore war on Christmas.
Yeah, but I think it's also other people from, like, you know, people who celebrate the other holidays are angry that it's red. Because they're like, well, I'm Jewish, and I celebrate Hanukkah, and I don't, like, red's not associated with Hanukkah.
It should be brown. It should be gray. A gray, featureless cup.
It should just be a plain white cup. No, white.
Like, oh,
white,
no way.
White suggests a white patriarch. That's wasps, damn it. Can't be a rainbow cup, because that hits on the wrong nerves for some people.
It should just be... clear. It should be entirely transparent.
Have no colors whatsoever.
In fact, it should not even be a cup. It should just be like a spigot. Like, it should be a faucet that you go to and then you put your mouth in.
I was going to say, you can't call it a spigot. It's too close to words that people don't like. So you can't have that.
It has a G in it, therefore it's bad.
It has too many letters in it that could almost sound like something else.
You could turn that into an anagram for something very mean.
Yeah, so I feel like the only polite way to do this is for everyone to just make their own damn coffee in their own house, I guess. I guess that's it.
No, that's an ableist thing, Chris.
Damn.
Oh, you can't win.
No, it's impossible. You can't win with Christmas.
Maybe people who like coffee should just shut the fuck up and drink their coffee, and people who don't like coffee can not waste money on it.
I feel like this is a sore spot.
Oh, no, wait, that's capitalist. No!
Nick, what about our communist? Our communist countrymen are going to be so offended.
Oh, no, we've stepped into a quagmire. Oh, no, unleashed an entire whole thing you don't have to want to deal with. Oh.
You know, people who live in quagmires don't appreciate their landform being used as a negative connotation.
They're already upset enough about having a family guy member, cast member named after them.
And he's a pervert.
Yeah, no. Bad rep.
And what do the perverts have to think about this? Like, you're portraying us in a derogatory fashion.
No, we have to stop now. Stop it. Oh. How have you been, though?
I'm good. Aside from that? I'm cold. It's started getting cold here, so I'm at the point now where while I do Weekly Manga Recap, I'm wearing, like, three leather layers, and even then I'm still kind of chilly.
Wish that there were a little bit more of a balance between us, because it is, I mean, like, Halloween and the week after were just ridiculously hot. Like, I think it had started getting cooler, and then suddenly it was like, no, it is, like, summer again now. So, it kind of sucked.
I enjoyed it. There was, like, 2 weeks where it was like, oh, everything's gone, and it came back for a little bit. It was like, oh, ooh, yeah, ah! And then it's immediately just back to, like, now it's cold and shitty again, and fuck you for enjoying yourself.
It was a little bit unfortunate because I went to a con called ShadowCon down here, and it's for the last couple of years it's been at a golf resort. So I mean, most of the con locations have been inside, but people, you know, it's between two different buildings, so people walk around outside a lot. There is some stuff that is outside and so on and so forth. Last year the weather was it was perfect for this. Like, it was autumn in the sense that people like romanticize autumn. Like, it was absolutely perfect. You know, you could put your jacket on, you could be perfectly fine. This year, it was just like, what the fuck is this? Why is it November and it is so hot? So, that's unfortunate.
How was ShadowCon, by the way?
It was quite good. I posted something on Twitter where it was like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, be posting some pictures occasionally over the next few days of stuff that I took. There was some really good cosplay. Cosplay's not really my thing, but I did take a bunch of pictures this year. There's some that are really cool. My favorite one I already posted while I was already at the con, which was like a mother-daughter pair where the mother was dressed like Ash and the daughter was dressed like Pikachu, and it was adorable as hell. But yeah, had a good time. Wish that I could just talk about the good time I had at the con, but there was something else that happened this weekend. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about this, but I mean, if I don't, then it's gonna be the elephant in the room where we're talking about Bleach, so let me just get this out.
I understand, Nick. I'm sorry the Buccaneers lost as well.
Ah!
But, you know,
Oh yeah, you gotta start talking about Shinsui, and then your son's like, oh, fuck you, Chris! Why the fuck did you have to get that dagger in the heart fumble recovery? Fuck you!
It really was.
We weren't gonna win anyway!
I, like, looked at my phone, and I was like, oh man, this is really close, I hope they can stall that Buccaneers drive, and I looked at the score again, I was like, did we score?
I questioned the entire, oh, we have to totally start lateraling it right now, as opposed to just go out of bounds, you idiot! Yeah, that was unfortunate. The other thing that happened, though, was I wrote an editorial for Anime News Network in which I discussed Bleach, more specifically how, you know, it's not as popular as it used to be, some people have stopped reading it, and so on and so forth. I claimed this was due to a drop in quality and discussed that throughout the article. You can check it out on animenewsnetwork.com if you haven't seen it already. If you disagree with my opinion, you can feel free to let me know about that. If you have anything really to say about it, then let me know. You can find me on Twitter, WhyWorlderOfTime. But, unfortunately, there was a group of Bleach fans who caught wind of it, and they were a little mad about it. Flames were launched on Twitter. People were blocked on Twitter. People were muted on Twitter, because some of the things that were said were kind of nasty. The worst of which, by the way, were not directed towards me. So I actually do feel kind of bad about the whole thing, because this makes me indirectly responsible for other people being treated like shit, so kind of guilty there. But that's the extent of my guilt, because, I mean, I criticize a work of fiction. You know, how dare I? Actually, that phrase was thrown around a lot. How dare you say this about Bleach and stuff? Well, it's an editorial. I criticize Bleach. I mean, yeah, if you disagree with my opinion on Bleach, that's cool. If you're cool about it, we could probably even, you know, discuss our differing opinions. But, first of all, I'm not going to bother arguing the only two facts I assert in the entire article. I mean, I said the anime was canceled, which is easier than saying the ratings dwindled and then it was ended for unknown reasons. Second was volume sales have dwindled, because they have. They're half of what they were 5 years ago. That aside, I'm also not going to bother to justify my having a negative opinion on Bleach, or having that negative opinion influence an editorial I wrote, which is, by the way, about my negative opinion on Bleach. I'm also not going to bother to argue that news sources run editorials all the time, therefore there's a place for editorials on a news site. Also, by the way, it's not necessary to constantly write I think, or I feel, or I believe when you are analyzing fiction, because these indicate that your writing is subjective, and it's impossible to objectively assess fiction in a satisfactory manner. So when you're analyzing fiction, everyone should assume you're speaking subjectively anyway. I was not trying to assert my opinions as fact. Also, if you write an article on a work of fiction expressing a negative opinion, even if that opinion is overwhelmingly negative, it's not a hate article. Because a work of fiction is not a person or group of people, which is what hate speech actually targets. And finally, there is nothing morally wrong with being very harsh towards a work of fiction. That's because criticizing a work of fiction is not the same as insulting people who read it and enjoy it. So unless Bleach is your holy text, I'm not going to feel bad about criticizing it, and I will criticize it as harshly as I damn well please. That said, I actually didn't dislike Bleach this week, so...
Yeah. It really, like, it almost, like, we needed, like, a chapter of Bleach this week that was just, like, it should have been that chapter where, they retconned how, Zangetsu worked. Like that one where you had like a 30 minute reason like how this is wrong and screwed up things.
I mean, yeah, actually they've retconned Zangetsu a few times, not as many times as Chad though, which is amazing because Chad has appeared less than Zangetsu. I think
he showed up like what, 2 weeks ago. He was like, oh, I feel cold, and that's been Chad's involvement in this arc thus far, really.
Oh, it's such a shame. I was kind of tempted to like open the show with "Welcome to the Beach Bash Podcast," where we bash Bleach and do nothing else. But that's not what we're gonna do this week. At least I'm not going to.
I didn't have strong enough opinion. The only thing I would question about Bleach this week is like, why a chicken? I don't understand why you turned into a chicken.
It's the ultimate life form, Chris. He is a long necked owl. We've got to do Black Clover first. Hang on. I mean, I guess we don't have to. We could do Bleach first.
No. We don't want to spoil it. Annalisa's here waiting for us to talk about Bleach anyway. Or, Bleach. She could also talk. She wants to talk about Black Clover.
Right. Let's do it. We are holding off on Great Teacher Onizuka for at least one more week. So instead, we're going to go right into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, starting with Black Clover, page 37, Next Time We Meet. So this chapter is pretty much like a kind of final wrap-up, I guess, for the entire preceding arc, because, you know, the danger is entirely past now, everyone is back home safely, and so on and so forth. And we actually opened with basically the Wizard King giving a press conference, which is actually kind of cool, because there are these little bits where his face is, like, popping up on the equivalent of, like, jumbo screens, like, you know, televisions that would be in the street or something like that, because he's, like, addressing the entire city at once. But, you know, he's like, okay, you know, they're terrorists who attacked us and so on and so forth, but they aren't making certain information public because they don't know everything that's going on. The Wizard King has his own suspicions, for example, that there was a traitor among the mages at the capital, but he doesn't know for sure, so that's not part of the public address. We then cut to said terrorists with Eye Patch Guy, whatever. Right, she says his name right there, Roddy's. Basically, he's like, oh, you know, that asshole Asta.
It's a much better nickname than he gets later on in the chapter.
He's like, I'm going to, you know, make the ultimate corpse army, and I'm going to kill that kid. And the glasses girl, who only, you know, briefly revealed herself, she shows him and is like, my skirt makes no sense.
It's so weird. Like, it's one of those times where it's like, this is...
Wait. Is part of the skirt missing, or are those plates over her skirt?
No, I think it's pieces that are missing. I think it's like, I don't know, like chain or pearls or something like that, like beads that hold it up there, and then those are blank. Basically, her hips are showing out of the outfit. And I remember seeing it, I was like, this is one of those times where it really kind of detracts from the character, because her gimmick is like she's like this crazy scientist. Like, she go around like, ooh, science, experiments. Like, I just like to think that she'd be a character who wouldn't even... Like, I feel like there's too much work that would be required for this outfit. She'd be like, I could be wasting my time doing science instead. Like, I feel like she's wearing a burlap sack or something.
She would spend too much time adjusting the outfit in order to continue on doing her weird experiments and stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, I really dislike... this is, like, a huge pet peeve of mine when particularly women wear clothing that is just like, and there's a slit on the side, even if it makes no sense whatsoever for there to be a slit on the side. Like, Natalia from WWE does that all the fucking time, and her outfits never make goddamn sense. It looks stupid. And yeah, she's got slits in the skirt.
It looks like a
loincloth. It's so weird.
But it's it's not slit all the way on the side. It's not a full loincloth, because it connects still at the bottom.
It's got like a buckle, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like the hips are cut out. And I feel like... who is... Tobata? Tabata, I feel like Tabata Sensei is just working to essentially create female characters with outfits that are just ridiculously hard to cosplay and inconvenient to cosplay. Like, between this and Noelle, I don't think you could. I mean, I'm not a woman, period. But I feel like if I was, and you paid me money, I'd be like, "No, this is ridiculous. Look at this. What is this? There's nothing there. Why would something? You did take so much work to put this on."
Sally is her name, by the way. It also says her name on that page.
Sally?
Sally, yeah.
Where does she say Sally?
The last panel. Raddy's is...
Keep your mitts off himself. Hmm. I don't know how I feel about that. It feels like such a normal name. I feel like she needed, like, a wacky name. Like, because I like her gimmick. Like, it's kind of fun. Like, I mean, the mad scientist isn't anything new. We spent the last couple weeks in Bleach talking about how it was an awful thing because he's a genocidal maniac who gets treated like a hero, but it's a fun character.
Well, she's actually a villain, though. It's an important difference. Mayuri made for a great villain in that first arc.
Yeah, like I enjoy her as like I enjoy her kind of character we get here. I feel like it could be interesting, but yeah, I don't know. Like, her outfit, and I don't know, the name Sally seems disappointing to me. I was hoping for something like insane, like, oh, her name's Splodabris or Spriggan Midoish or something, I don't know, like, just something wacky. Spriggan Midoish.
So she is arguing with Roddy's, basically saying, like, oh, I want to, you know, tinker with him while he's still alive, as opposed to Roddy's just wants to kill him and stuff. Count the number of people who talk about what they want to do with Asta, slash their being tied exclusively to Asta. It's getting to a very frustratingly high number of characters in this series. Teleportation magic guy, spatial magic guy. I don't think we know his name. I actually don't think we know his name at all. He actually is kind of regretful that he couldn't get away with... I think that he's speaking. I can't tell, because the word bubble isn't connected to anyone. Someone is like, oh, we couldn't save Jork and Catherine.
Jork. See, that's what her name should be, Jork. It's not
Jork
fair.
The scientist girl.
The women have normal names, like Catherine and Sally, and the guys are called Rades and Jork.
I think it is actually Leader Guy who is saying this, because he's like, oh, I couldn't save Jork and Catherine, and then Space Magic Guy says, well, they won't leak out any information, and then he says, well, I'm not worried about that. You know, we're going to rescue them. I think he is also the one who moves his robe in this next picture. Yeah, he is. You can see him moving, shifting his arm, and then he pulls up, and his arm is all gaunt and withered and so on and so forth. And he says, oh, I thought I dodged it, but I seem to take a little bit of the attack. So, like, his arm has been through an intense acceleration of time because of the Wizard King's magic. So that's actually really cool, I think. It's like, oh, I took this tremendous wound from this guy, and my arm is all fucked up now.
Essentially just blocking his ability still withered his entire arm.
Mm-hmm. This guy shows himself to be a pretty, you know, charismatic and effective leader in a short period of time. It's like, you know, we're going to rescue our comrades who were captured, and we're going to get revenge on the Clover Kingdom and create a new country that is ours alone, and so on and so forth. As opposed to, you know, it's like, oh, they were not important followers, and they were too weak to be worth caring about, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I always like it when they show a villain group has some kind of affection towards its members. I mean, you generally always gotta get a point of, like, yeah, there's, like, grunts or something like that, but having, like, named characters and be like, no, like, I'm actually really kind of bummed we couldn't save them as well, and seeing the kind of loyalty they all share, it makes the group seem more interesting, because it's easy just to make a group where, like, oh, we're all bad guys, we don't like each other, or anything like that. Like, that's, you know, that takes no work.
Right, there should be a reason why these guys have chosen to work together.
Mm-hmm. And this, you know, saying that they're all essentially super loyal to this guy, and in turn, you know, he's very considerate towards them as well, and they even note that he's someone who saved them. So it seems to be some practices are all people who in one way or another have been wounded by the Clover Kingdom. And its practices. So I really like the way that kind of establishes this group.
So we cut back to the Clover Kingdom. Catherine and Jork are being interrogated, but apparently these guys have an interrogation spell, which is kind of terrifying. But there's a protection spell on them that isn't working, so it's not working. And then, you know, Catherine, who is looking older, by the way, so maybe she uses some, like, sort of anti-aging magic on herself.
Well, she used, she noted that she wanted to eat people's mana because it helped keep her young and beautiful.
So apparently she is actually aging.
Yeah, I think she literally is doing that to keep herself younger looking.
So she's like, you know, we'll never talk, you know, about that person is the light in the darkness. Ah, God. And Jork.
Jork.
He says, when all others abandoned us, the master did not. We could never repay that with betrayal.
Oh, he can't be called Jork and have that kind of voice. He needs to be like, we know all others have abandoned us. The old master did not during the burn destroying thing.
I don't know if he's Canadian or Scandinavian.
He's a lot of things, you know, eh? What's going on there? Burn the burn the burn the
I'm Jork. Jork, Jork, Jork. Jork, Jork, Jork. So basically they're like, okay, we don't know anything about them except that their leader is good and he's powerful, basically. So Wizard King theorizes, I'll bet that he was the one who defeated Fuego Leon. When Fuego Leon wakes up, we may learn something, so let's wait for the King of Lions to awaken.
I wish I could have the nickname the King of Lions.
The King of Lions. It's a badass
nickname.
That's
so cool. Yeah. Put that on business cards. People are like, what is this? Like, I'm the King of Lions. They're like, are you a lion tamer or a zookeeper or something? No, I'm just, you know, a podcast.
So we cut away to where Asta is walking alongside Noelle and Charmy, and Asta's like, oh no, we're lost! And Charmy's just like, there, here, eat some of this. And she gives Asta and Noelle some food. And I actually really like the panel that follows them all, just kind of chowing down, like how determined Noelle looks, and just, oh, this is so good! But yeah, it's like, oh yeah, it's nice to see teammates hanging out together and being friendly with each other and stuff. This chapter actually did a lot to kind of endear Charmy to me. Because she wasn't being selfish. It's like, here, have some of my food. That's nice.
Oh, so you're turning around on Charmy, Nick?
A little bit.
Okay.
Also, some stuff that happens after this made me think, Well, I'll talk about that when we get to it.
Okay.
She also explains how she managed to sneak into the Capitol, which was she somehow can shrink herself and also hide herself in a ball of cotton, and then she just kind of hid in Asta's hood.
I missed that that's what happened. I saw the panel where she turned into that, and I guess it didn't follow the next panel closely enough, so I was like, what, did she just float through as a big cotton ball? How did no one see that?
Well, we know it earlier that she seems to somehow grow and shrink at random, too. Like, at times she looks really chibi, at other times she looks like a kind of a teenage girl, and here we see she can shrink to be smaller than somebody's head, so.
Yeah. Now I see.
Anyway, Asta's group stumbles across Yuno along with Mimosa and Hans, and so they're like, oh, look over there. And what does he say? So Asta says, Yuno, I hear you took down enemy like it was nothing, you jerk. And he does. I like how Yuno just goes ... in response to this, because, like, yeah, that doesn't deserve a response. Good job. Then he's like, give me a proper greeting, jerk face. Don't just get all snobby because you took one down. Courtesy makes the world go round, you know. What? That's just being such a dick, isn't he? So, you know, summons a fucking bird of wind with his magic and launches it towards Asta. Asta uses his cleaver in order to block it, and it explodes. And Yuno's like, oh, I guess I went a little bit too harsh with that. So Asta freaks out, is like, oh, was he trying to kill us? And the bird has transformed into a message written in the air that just says, later, Shorta. And then he just walks away.
I feel like it's like the one time, I wish this was in like a seinen series, where you said we give him more derogatory nicknames, like, later, fuck Tarda, or something. No, like, I just keep seeing it, like, Dorksta and Shorta.
Yeah.
I feel like
Asshole Asta.
Yeah, I'm just like, we need a better nickname, like a derogatory nickname for this guy.
But I have to say, this is probably my favorite Yuno moment in the series so far.
Where he's just being like, fuck you, kid. Floats out a little bird and just has a message. It's
because,
like,
he knows Asta's not going to be hurt. Yeah. And then he, like, finishes it off by kind of dissing him and then just walking away without talking to him. Because they make such a big deal about how Yuno is like, oh, the only person who respects Asta and stuff. We know how much he respects Asta, but if he can occasionally just, like, take a shit on him and when he's being a dick.
Yeah, like, be a friend and have that kind of, like, you know, a little bit of a back and forth kind of relationship.
This actually helps Yuno stand out a little bit from the cast, because look at the other two members on his team, how they reacted in the last chapter, where Hans, you know, immediately went over and hugged Asta when he was safe. And Mimosa immediately went over and glommed Asta when she knew he was safe. We don't need three people like that who are like, oh, look at how awesome Asta is all the time. You can have Yuno be the one who actually secretly respects Asta the most, but is willing to kind of take him down a peg or two when he's getting too big for his britches. I like that.
Yeah. No, I think, and that's, you know, they share the same sort of sentiment we've seen them do before of, like, you know, I'll get stronger and, you know, live up to my expectation of you, or I'm going to be stronger so I can fight alongside you, or I'll get stronger the same way. Although, it did make me wonder, like, because Yuno's thinking, like, I'll make sure I get stronger to stay being always stronger than you, that kind of logic. But I'm like, did Asta actually gain any kind of significant power up in this arc?
No.
I was going to say, Yuno got, like, realizes he has Sylph now, but I don't think Asta actually gained anything. He just kind of fought and then it ended, I guess.
I mean, Mimosa's thing makes sense, where it's like, I'm going to get strong enough to fight alongside you. I am Hinata, basically. Uh-huh. But yeah. So we cut ahead as they return to the Black Bull's headquarters. And so Magna and Luck are like, oh yeah, good job. You know, look, we managed to get a star for our deeds. It's awesome. And Luck is like, hey, let's use our combo move, Crackling Magna Typhoon. And Magna's like, we're never doing that again. We get a little cut of, like, what happened.
Looks like they just threw Magna in a circle and shocked him with lightning.
Yeah, basically. So yeah, and S is like, oh, actually, yeah, we're back from the Capitol, but they may be a third class junior magic knight at an award ceremony. And they're like, what? What does that mean? And none of them know what it means. And
this actually helped me a lot, though. I guess when they first did that, like, chapter where they explained all the rankings, I just wasn't, like, my mind was like, this is too much text, and I just tuned out. But I guess the explanation here is pretty simple. Like, there's intermediate, or there's what, senior, intermediate, junior, and then ranks 5 through 1 within that. And mm-hmm. you just keep going up. That seems relatively easy for me to grasp.
Yeah.
Although it is weird to me that they have a guy with, like, a magic no one's ever seen before who was, like, able to fight one of the terrorists attacking the city and win, like, against him. And they're like, you can be the third lowest third ranking class. We have.
Yeah. Well, and also they make a note of how, despite the fact that Madden has been around for much longer than Asta, and Luck is actually way stronger than him, seemingly, they're both last class. But when you hear about, you know, you see all the negative rankings that the Black Bulls have, and know that they are, you know, like the most derided, despite being really strong, I guess that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Also, Charmy is noted to now be a first class junior Magic Knight. She's like, on your knees, ha ha ha. And she's, like, even doing this weird little dance as well. He's like, ah, ha, ha, worship me, and so on. So, despite this, one of the things that I noted in this chapter is there are all these people who have this, you know, ridiculous, like, oh, Asta is so great thing. Charmy is one of the very few who is like, you know, is so great. You need to have something in this series other than Asta is great, and I am very interested in him. So, yes, I did line up on Charmy a bit.
There you go, Nick. Yeah. Turn it around.
It's important to have someone tooting someone's horn that isn't Asta. Okay. So then, like, Captain Yami is like, oh, you know, I heard that Fuego Leon got taken out, but he'll be fine. He'll you know, get stronger and come right back. And he actually cheers Asta up a little bit. And then he's like, okay, by the way, you're not allowed to start training immediately. Rest. And then someone appears. It's
okay, thank God. You didn't know who this dude was either?
Well, because we haven't seen him since like the entire group was introduced, basically. Because
he hasn't had like a scene or anything like that with the other guys.
Right, so I mean, this is...
What, him and Gray, I think? Gray's the big giant dude or whatever right. like that.
I think there might be more beyond that, but yeah, so this is, I guess, going to be his big introductory thing, as he invites Asta to a mixer! And amusingly, Nami's like, no, you have to work. This kind of goes unrecognized, so yeah. So presumably that's going to be the start of our, I guess, probably a mini-arc, is them going to a bit of a party, I guess.
Well, mixer? Doesn't that... This is where I reveal something about myself, Nick. I didn't get invited to many parties.
You don't go to social gatherings?
I don't go to many parties, but I believe a mixer implies, like, a party with both men and women at it.
It can, but it's not necessary.
Or is the mixer to reply in reference to alcohol? Now, that alcohol I know a lot about, Nick. I know a lot about drinking alone.
A mixer is an informal dancer party arranged to give members of a group an opportunity to get acquainted.
Okay, so it's just like a gathering.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be like, oh, no, and, you know.
I don't think I've ever been to something that has been qualified as a mixer, or at least called that, but yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that makes sense. He was like, hey, let's go and get acquainted with some members of the group and stuff. Yeah. All right, but yeah, Black Clover had some, I mean, it was kind of an uneventful chapter, but little character moments that made me kind of lighten up on the two characters that I dislike most in the series. So yeah, looking up.
I liked it. I thought overall it was a good sort of follow up to everything we had. It was kind of a good closure, I guess, for the arc. It did more to make me intrigued for the story. And again, I needed to kind of pull back a bit from the other few weeks. So I enjoyed this. This put Black Clover in a place where I'm still not necessarily enjoying it per se. Like, I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to find out what happens next week. But it's one that I'm like, yeah, you know, I'll look forward to reading it, I guess. Or when it comes up in the magazine, I'm not like, oh, I guess I gotta work through this. I'll be like, yeah, let's see where this goes.
Right. Okay, let's move on.
And clearly some people enjoyed it. We're in Hitbox, by the way, this week. We're having some issues with Twitch. Mm-hmm. And when we're on Hitbox, I'm able to put up a poll in the chat to see what people like. It's like built into the Hitbox service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, two people, there's a small people who actually thought this was the best chapter of the whole week. So...
Yeah,
and
I mean, it's
90%
not
certain Annalisa isn't even one of them, because I think she had to go for World Trigger, so...
Yeah, it's not a tremendous portion, but it is more than the last time we did a poll in Hitbox, I think.
So it'd be nice to see if this series starts to slowly pick up in terms of popularity.
Now let's move on to Bleach, chapter 650, the theater suicide scene 4. Last time, it looked like Shinsui had killed Lilibaro by just fucking cutting his head off. This chapter, no, or right at the end of that chapter, Lilibaro was like, I grew a new head out of energy!
I'm a chicken now! I'm a chicken deer!
He grows into... if you've seen Avatar The Last Airbender, he looks like Wan Chi Tong's more demonic form when he grows his neck out and stuff. Because he's, yeah, got this bird-like head on a long neck, four sets of wings, and really bizarre quadrupedal base. He looks very strange. Anyway, he has blown a hole in Shinsui's chest, and Shinsui reacts to this by going, oh, I guess cutting his head off wasn't enough. I give up.
It's like me during 90% of my Hearthstone games. I'm like, oh, I eliminated this one big threat and another's appeared. I'm done.
Lilibaro acts very he acts really, really twitchy and weird while he's in this new form. Like, his eyes blink sideways, for example.
And out of sync with one another.
Mm-hmm. And he, like, twists his head upside down while he's ranting about how awesome he is. And how he's like a messenger of God and so on and so forth. Very, very weird looking. So he's, you know, like, oh, you know, you cannot possibly defeat me. I am immortal. There's nothing you can do to I am a messenger of God. And he lifts one of his arms? Legs?
He
grows an arm. He grows an arm from his side with pure energy. Lifts it up and then blasts energy out of it. It's very weird. He just blows this tremendous like canyon in the floating island that they're on.
It's weird, and I feel like there's no good way to say this because he reminds me a lot of Tosin when he released, and not just because they're both black guys, but the fact that it was like a like final release form that seems to have nothing to do with what else the character was built around. Like, Tosin's like, yeah, I had this whole sound gaze thing. Now I'm like this giant insect monster. And this dude's like, yeah, I was a sniper with a furry cowboy hat who could shoot no matter what. And now I'm a chicken man with deer legs and energy blasts from my arms or something.
Well, I joked when he, like, first assumed it was like, so we went from being a sniper to being a bullet. This one has nothing to do with either of them. He's very weird looking.
It's almost like Kubo's like, I had this, like, character design. I don't know where I'm going to use it. Fuck it, I'll just use it here. Who cares? It's energy. Whatever.
So, Shinsui is hiding after managing to escape the blast, and he starts talking to his Bankai, calling, she calls him Sakura Nosuke, which is kind of weird, but there's a lot of stuff that happens in this chapter.
I thought her name was Sakura Nosuke.
No, is it? What was her name?
I thought she was Sakura Nosuke.
Hang on, let me look it up real quick. Got to fucking bide my time while looking up the Bleach Wikia. Fucking bullshit. Let me see the fucking thing is.
It like went on just to grin. It's just frustration and anger by the end of it.
Well, if you go too long, then you just kind of have to like loop it over anyway. come on. Oh god, I hate wikis. They're always so slow for me. Hang on. Bankai. It doesn't say it. What the fuck?
Well, let me see if I can't look it up on my end. Let's have a race to see who can find it first. Wait, doesn't it just a button that immediately clicks and it's like, here's my power?
Hang on.
Bankai. Is it special? Isn't it?
Come on! Where the fuck is it? There it is. Karamatsu Shinju. Katen Kyokatsu Karamatsu Shinju. So Sakuramatsu is, like, not something that's been said. Sakura Nosuke, rather. It's not something that's been said so far. And I think that she is calling him that. Because it says Sakura Nosuke and then let's run from her to him.
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. Wait. If I type...
I imagine... Oh, because he's associated with Sakura Petals. Like, he has been in the past, so maybe that's just her nickname for him? I don't know.
I guess this is maybe something we understood Japanese better, like the Nosuke part of it might make more sense. I thought it was her name.
Well, Nosuke is a name ending that's kind of common.
What's it meant to imply?
I don't know. But, I mean, like, Samanosuke is a name. You know, it's like, you know, Sasuke, mm-hmm. is similar to it. So, I don't know. I think that it's some sort of title that he has. And anyway, a lot of stuff kind of gets revealed slash begins to reveal stuff in this chapter that is really kind of game-changing. So, I mean, we'll see. Anyway, she says, like, look, you used the ultimate technique. We can't do anymore. You fought as hard as you could, but you're about to die. You should just run. Come on, let's go. You go to sleep, and I will carry you away. But then he wakes up after basically passing out, and Nanao's there. And she's like, yo, come on, wake up, Captain, wake up. And he's coughing up blood and so on and so forth. And Nanao says, release my Zanpakuto! And, you know, she demands to do it, and she says, forget your promise to my mother. And Lilibaro suddenly appears right behind her, and is like, the adjutant has returned. You know, you must not know how precious life is because you came back after he tried to save you. Shinsui uses the Okyo technique again to buy some time and get away. And Lilibaro is mostly just annoyed. And so finally they get a little bit of distance, and Shinsui says, your mother, so you knew about this. You have always known about this. And I was like, yep. Okay, you can have it back. This is your Zanpakuto. Meet Hyokotsu. So, remember last week when I said the Bankai spirit looks like the older of the two Katen Kyokatsu spirits that were in that one filler arc? Mm-hmm. This is the other one. So, this is very strange. And, first of all, it's implying that he's been using Nanao's Zanpakuto in addition to his own the whole time.
Well, it's implying that the anime suggested that.
No. I mean, because he somehow has had her Zanpakuto. Like, because she is saying, release my Zanpakuto so, like, I can use it, or something like that.
I didn't know. I guess I could also... I was thinking it meant that hers was, like, sealed.
Well, he says you can have it back, and Kyokatsu is part of Katen Kyokatsu.
Okay.
So either they're somehow very closely connected to one another, and he's been using it, or... I don't know. It's very weird. Maybe this has to do with the big deal that they made way back when he first used his Shikai. Oh, he and Ukitake are, like, the only two that wield two Zanpakutos when they're released. Although I don't know then how Ukitake would have a double one. Whatever. It's weird, and I'm waiting for further explanation before, like, passing judgment on this. So, really, I didn't really have much negative to say about this chapter, because, like, Lilibaro, he looks weird, yeah, but it's different, and he's super intimidating, because he's just like, I just had my head cut off, and I grew another one! This one has a beak and a long neck. And then this big development, which actually matches one of the joking predictions I made last week.
You totally called it, where fucking Nanao comes in to save them with their Bankai.
It's like, well, okay then. Although, if she does end up doing that, that's kind of going to be weird if she's just like, I haven't used my Zanpakuto ever. First time I use it will be to save the day.
And the Bankai.
It's like, well, you didn't really earn this, did you? Also, this implies then that if her Zanpakuto has been sealed for a long enough time to the point where she wasn't supposed to know about it, but she has anyway, then that means that somehow she became a Shinigami without actually having a Zanpakuto. That confirms that. Which is weird.
I don't try to pretend to know anything about how the soul society works at this point.
Again, presumably... more explanation will be following, but it is very much like a So, yeah. Color me intrigued, and I'm willing to see where this goes before passing judgment. Unlike Lilibaro! Oh.
I think that he's a baby chicken, man.
And there you have it.
Alright, so we'll move on to Fairy Tale then, chapter 461. This perfume goes to, and douchebag's on the cover, so I'm not even going to bother. Fuck, half the chapter's about him, isn't it?
Yep, right. It is.
So, last time, everybody defeated Wall. The Rajin tribe basically united their powers, and technically Ichiru was there to help with it. Actually, how do you pronounce his name? I think it's Ichiya. That's right. Ichiya was there to help as well. And this is kind of the follow-up to it where he explains why he's there. And he...
I actually do like this. Because it's like how he perceived things went down.
He basically just follows along with how his, like, recollection of things went, which was just the fairy tale guild masters, like, burst into his guild, and were like, we're gonna take Loxus back, and the rest of the Rajin tribe, da-da-da-da-da, and they grab him, and they're like, oh, no, we're gonna take Rabot now, da-da-da-da-da, and they're like, let's go to the Empire, and he's there through all of these scenes with the same look and the same expression of, how dare you, how dare you, as they take his boat with him on it, grab Makarov, return home.
I love the bit with Makarov where Makarov is like crying his eyes out during his speech, and they're like, it's okay, and he's like, what's going on?
How dare you? Like, the entire time he's just there like, oh, why did you bring me? Why did you take me along?
Which of course is completely different from what actually happened, because he was hanging out with them in the fucking hot spring, remember?
And even seems just like,
and he's like, I just stayed around when we got to Magnolia.
But he's like, you know, and then Albrecht suddenly attacked, and, you know, I'm not speaking to you anymore, and he's, like, crunching Wall's decapitated head. When Sieg takes a look closer at it, and he's like, you know, well, watch out, and it explodes. And it seems as though, Nick, Ichiya may be dead. He's not dead. They all protected him. All the Rajin tribe gathered together and shielded him with their bodies, and they're really, really hurt.
They protected him with the power of a group hug.
Yes. And we cut away then to the south of Fjord, near the port town of Hargian, where we see a strange man before laughing on a boat. It was someone we haven't seen before. And one of the, I think it's the only other female member of the Spriggan 12 that we know of, is commenting like, oh, that's a creepy laugh. Could you please stop doing that? And we are introduced to Wall Ito, his real body. So Wall isn't dead, Nick.
I am so glad.
The robot that was defeated last week was only his metallic body that I guess he sends out, and he sent out with the express kind of logic of, yeah, well, it's going to lose. It has to lose, basically. Like, I'd hate to think that that's enough to defeat these guys. He's just commenting on the fact, like, ah, I'm super awesome. Look at me. I'm, you know, those... You know, it's just like the brief suggested, this is going to be really fun. I forget what her name is. They don't say it anywhere here. So I'm going to call her Lady McHare. And she's like, oh, you're saying your puppet was defeated? But he's like, yeah, but that goes in the saw it coming category. What's really fun is that a Geo got taken down and Brandish is an enemy prisoner. And Hare McLady says, ha, you're kidding. Randy is an enemy prisoner? Oh, that must suck for her. Because remember, they didn't like each other too much. Do you remember that, Nick? Are you still here? Am I talking to myself?
I said no.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's like, yeah, isn't it great? I gotta say, fairy tale ain't half bad. But it's no fun having them think we're pushovers. No fun at all, D. Maria. Ah, I said it at the end. There we go. Retroactively, Nick, go back in time and assume all the times I called her Lady McHare.
We don't edit this podcast.
That's why I said you, retroactively, in your own imagination, go back and call yourself Dee Maria. At which point, he says, he starts actually transforming his arms together into an enormous cannon. Like, it's...
Well, he actually summons it from his arms.
Oh, okay. He looks like, yeah, he does summon it. It's the same color as his arms, that's why I thought he was transforming into it. But it's this enormous can, like one of those magic screens pops up next to his eyes, and Dee Maria's like, that's 400 kilometers away, even you can't hit that. And Wall responds, I am the Leech Machinus, Wall Sama, never underestimate me! Ultra long magic, anti-material magic cannon! And there's like three panels of just this enormous cannon firing straight at the guild. One of the members of the guild notices that it's coming. Mavis is like, oh, it's probably an Elbras attack. Freed, get the barrier up again. Freed. Oh, fuck. That's just like, well, that light's done. And everyone realizes what's happening. Like, shit, we're gonna get blown up. But then all of a sudden, Christina, the ship from Blue Pegasus, crashes in, basically intercepts the blow, gets completely annihilated in the process, but takes a shot for it. And as the ship is getting destroyed, Ichiya basically, like, slams on the comm link and shouts out, you know, you didn't think that this was going to be it. You know, once you're part of a guild, you know, we're all part of it. This is war, and this battle involves us all, as we cut away to the various members of the other guilds, none of which, whom are very interesting whatsoever, but they'll probably all show up at some point during this arc. So,
Rose thinks so, too.
Yes. He doesn't say it, but he's there, thinking it.
He's thinking it.
He's thinking it right there off in the corner.
It is kind of sad when you think about it. It's just like, I look at one and just like, oh, fuck, that's Jellia's group. And then it's just like, what? Why the fuck is a Cerberus 4 here or whatever?
Cerberus Quattro, I think. Or Cerberus Puppies is their real name.
Quattro Puppies or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't... It's like, hey, it's,
and then there is fucking
Kaguya and the cat girl who's
right,
a friend of them. Mermaid Heel?
Mermaid, something like that.
Mermaid and Heel.
And then it's just like, and then there is the one guild that actually matters, the one that has Sting and everybody in it.
Sabretooth. I mean, Leon's guild kind of matters a little bit, although, like, without Jura, it's kind of hard to give too much of a fuck about them. And they didn't show Blue Pegasus on there. I guess Ichia is the only one we're going to get out of that. There's like four of the members of that stupid guild. I guess they're just not going to bother showing up.
I like how the Sabretooth one is like, oh, here's the Dragon Slayers, Minerva, and why not Yukino?
the spirit summon lady.
We had her sister recently, so she'll be here too, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I am really curious what Quattro Puppies will possibly do, because it's, what's his name?
Bacchus.
Bacchus, yeah. The only member of their group who is any importance is Bacchus, and even he kind of sucks.
Because he lost to Elfman, yeah.
Well, he lost to Ichia in a joke fight afterwards, so right. His stock's really plummeted. But, no, I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of what would to be expected, but it's a nice, effective little chapter, and it's kind of cool to be like, oh, okay, the Spriggan 12 isn't actually down three members in a couple, you know, in the span of about a month. It seems they're only actually technically down one member, and even then, I would not be shocked if a Geo shows back up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that this stuff's kind of turned stuff around. It looks as though it's like, okay, it looks like we're gonna be down to one defeated and one captured, which means that 11 people are gonna get a chance at least to go in big fights and stuff like that in the future.
And Wall looks really cool in this fight too.
Oh yeah, he's just like, oh no, that was just one of my puppets. Now I'm gonna pull out a giant fucking gun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like his character, his what we've seen of his personality so far. So yeah.
So good chapter.
Okay, let's see here. All right. Next up, we're going to be talking about Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 142, The Ultimate Foul Play. Last chapter, big emotional meeting among the members of the Polar Star Dorm, thinking like, oh no, we're going to get kicked out, I don't want to get kicked out. And Soma went to issue a Shokugeki to Aizon, despite the fact that he knew that the contest would be rigged against him, and so that's where we left off. So, we start off with this, I guess, notice being sent to, I guess, it shows up at the Polaris Dorm. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, Soma is actually going to challenge Aizon. And it's just this little thing where it's a note from Soma that says, I went to challenge Aizon Senpai to a Shokugeki. I left some curry in the fridge for everyone. Reheat it in the microwave and enjoy. His little doodle of himself.
How casually it's on there, like, yeah, good luck.
I do like that thing. It's something that I didn't really notice about Soma until recently. It's like, he seems to think just offering people food will make things okay. Like he did that with Aaron. It was just like, hey, let me try some of your cooking. I brought more pork buns.
Yeah, I brought some of my cooking. Some of you already tried before.
That means it's okay. By the way, I like the little cover page that follows with Yuki and Megumi teaching Erina how to use a washing machine.
So, like, it's been 2 weeks. You need to get out of that fucking nightgown.
And, like, I just love the look of absolute wonder on her face.
She's like, you hit buttons and it does things?
So everyone, of course, in the dorm is freaking out. They say, oh, there's no way that he's going to win. He's going to get expelled. Megumi immediately rushes off and she's like, oh, Soma's gonna get, you know, kicked out. But they're like, oh, calm down. And, I should know his name by now, because he keeps on showing up and not doing anything. Ibasaki says, look, Soma knew this would happen. That is why he left alone. He didn't want us to get involved, so let him go. Then Hisako shows up in a panic, because she realized, oh, the Polaris Storm is going to be close, so she rushed over so that she heard. Then, of course, she hears that Soma has challenged Azon, and they all suddenly decide, oh, we should check the TV. It's on right now. So it comes on. They're covering the Shokugeki. Then Azon, we cut over to where the waiting room is for the Shokugeki, and Azon says, the main ingredient will be free-range chicken. The Satsuma Jidori.
It's very local chicken. Can we skip this?
Yeah.
Like, three and a half paragraph long explanation of it?
He goes, it is typical Shokugeki no Soma, very long explanations. Like, oh, known for its low-fat, tender meat, and powerful umami.
I'm like, it might be really interesting if I lived anywhere near where I could get it.
A piddly line cook like you should never have the chops to handle something like, are you listening to me? What are you doing? Oh, God. Let's see. And suddenly, Rindo, that's her name, bursts in, and she's like, Azon, how could you do this?
She calls him a drip. I don't know why, I just like that insult. You drip.
And Azon's like, Rindo, what are you doing here?
No, puts Nick, that's not his voice.
Rindo, what the hell are you doing here? And she's like, it's Rindo Senpai to you, and she puts him in a headlock. I love this little conversation that follows, where she's like, oh, Soma, what are you doing here? I can't believe this. You know, thanks to Izami's revolution, so much has changed, and the entire council is swimming in paperwork. We barely have time to come up to breathe, except for that dumb Kuga brat who keeps blowing it all off. And now you've gotten started this whole Shokugeki thing. That's even more paperwork. And since Azon's involved, he can't do his share. So guess where all got dumped? On me! And so Soma says, wait a minute, if you're so overwhelmed with work, how did you get here? And he's like, I dropped it in Tsukasa's lap and took off. Oh, and you cut to Tsukasa, who's got three giant piles of paper standing in front of him.
He's like, oh.
Because he's got to do Kuga's and Azon's and Rindo's.
I just find it so funny that, like, our main antagonist is a zombie, but, like, on the level of the chefs, Tsukasa is the top. He's the pinnacle of the school. He's the most intimidating presence within that. And he's the butt monkey. He's the butt monkey of their unit. He's the guy who everyone just shits on.
And Rindo's the one who complains about it.
Yeah, look how she's the one like, oh, can you believe all the work I had to do?
How'd you get here?
Oh, I just dropped it off in his lap. And she has this look, like, she has an expression, like, she's like, what? Like, what do you mean? What are you giving me that look for?
Oh, God. So Aizen's like, all right, we'll go do prep work that you need to do. So someone's like, I'll just use the kitchen here, and, you know, that'll be that, and so on and so forth. And they go into the Shokugeki area, Azon is approached by the judges, and they're like, ah ha ha, you know, no mind, we didn't think another challenger would step up, but he's a fool, you know, shall we sample only your dish and call it a day? And Azon just like, do whatever you want. I look forward to your rendering appropriate judgment again today. But then Rindo comes up to him and says, you know, it's too bad, you know, because I know that the real point of your example the other day was just to knock Soma Yukihira down a peg or three, right? But not only did he not back down, he still came after you. Oh, well, don't let it get to you. That just means that he's, you know, got a stiff spine, so, you know, whatever. This is really interesting, and it kind of gives a little bit more clarity to what happened in the last chapter, where he was seemingly trying to talk Soma out of the challenge. But instead, it turns out he was just disappointed that his tactics didn't pay off. So, yeah, like that. Mm-hmm. But Azon has a backup plan as he gets a phone call confirming that his plans are being carried out as the participants approach and get ready to start the Shokugeki. But suddenly, a group of people approaches the Polaris dorm, and Azon's like, oh, I almost forgot. I sent some of my boys over to Polaris a minute ago. I'm really, really sorry about this, but you know how the move-out date was in 10 days? Well, that schedule just got bumped up a teeny tiny bit. It's terribly unfortunate, but the new eviction date is right now. My boys are on their way to sea. It's peaceably followed. Our cooking time is 3 hours. By the time we're finished here, Polaris will be empty. The only things that will be waiting for you will be the empty shell of your former home and the devastated faces of all your friends. Now what say we get the Shokugeki underway, Here's to a nice, fair and square match.
Dun, 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 douche.
And someone looks pissed off again!
It is a pretty douchey move, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clever. I mean, great psychological warfare. It's like, hey, it doesn't matter how this is going to turn out. Your precious dorm's got to be empty anyway. The eviction's going to be completed, so...
Suck it.
Which begs the question, then, if the eviction is followed and then Soma wins, will they just move back in? It won't matter. Maybe Soma will realize that and be just like, well, that doesn't change anything. But yeah, that is great. That is great. It's like, oh, fine. Well, fuck you then. I'll just, you know, move up the eviction date because I can do that.
It is rather amusing. And I like how just Kuga's just become like the character you like to hate. He's just become like
Aizon.
Yeah, Aizon, sorry.
You said Kubo for some reason.
Kubo?
This is why Kubo writes Bleach, is because Oma didn't listen to him.
Yeah, Kubo's just become the character you like to hate, right? Aizen. I guess it's because Aizen in my mind. I just keep.
You went from
wordplay.
Because Aizen is Kubo, so.
Yeah, they're the same one and the same. Aizon is just a villain you really like to hate. And, like, it's weird to me that two of the best examples of villains I can note when I think of a manga come from series where you don't traditionally think villains of. Food Wars, this is a fantastic example of just a good antagonist because you just want him to fail. But you don't, he's not written in any poor manner or anything like that where you're like, oh, he's, you know, I just hate him because he's annoying. You hate him because he's just so seedy and scummy, but everything he does is logical. You know, it's not bullshit or anything like that. And another
one,
people
where it's like, oh, you know, they are capable chefs and they actually are very serious about their craft. You know, the only really underhanded person that we saw before this was Subaru. And the only thing that he really did was he just found out what his opponent was going to do and then copied it, which, I mean, it's underhanded, but it's not like, I'm going to get inside your head by just getting, you know, having the thing you're fighting for be ruined before the match even starts up because I've got all the leverage in this case. And, of course, remember, Subaru was working for Aizon, so there you go. Or he manipulated that to happen.
Yeah. And then the other one I think of would be Aegon from High Shield 21, a football manga. I'm like, the two...
He is actually really... I mean, it's something about the smirk that really reminds me of Aegon, yeah.
Yeah, and just that air of superiority to them, you know?
And the glasses.
Yeah. But no, it's
Aizons aren't sunglasses, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's a very interesting scenario, and I'm very excited for next week to start seeing what this guy does, because we've never seen him cook before. We've seen him handle every other aspect of it. We know he gave the recipe to that chicken place that helped him become a success, but we've never seen him cook. So I want to see what that's like.
And, you know, one of the things that I suspected when Rindo showed up was that she would somehow make sure that Soma didn't get expelled or something along those lines. But then, no, it turns out she was just there to spectate, basically, and offer that little bit of insight on Aizon's motivations and stuff. But this does kind of make you questions like, well, maybe Soma will, like, lose but won't get expelled or something like that. Because when you think about it, they want Soma. You know, Aizon wanted Soma to work for him at the start of all this, and presumably all of his tactics and stuff were to break Soma's spirit so that then he could exploit his abilities and so on. That's why he's so pissed off, is because he thought he finally had Soma cornered and was going to be able to use him, and now Soma's still standing up to him and so on and so forth. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly how this plays out, because there are a number of questions about this. And I don't think it's necessarily going to be Polaris stays or Soma gets expelled. There may be a third option in all this because of that.
It's very interesting. It's an intriguing direction I think the series is going to take, or has the opportunity to take, where I don't really know what's going to happen. I feel like obviously they're not going to be like, well, you're expelled and the school's closed. I feel like that would right. be too dark, but it's at that point, so like, what happens here? Because like, usually it's easy to make some kind of prediction, but at this point I'm like, I don't really know how this is going to go, and I think I like having that kind of guessing aspect to some series.
Okay, let's move on to My Hero Academia, chapter number 66, Midoriya's Observations.
Which, based off our poll, was the most favorited chapter this week.
There's a lot that goes on this chapter, because it starts off with Deku and Bakugo now inside of Recovery Girl's little shack being treated. Bakugo is obviously in worse shape than Deku because he is unconscious and he is seemingly going to be for a while. So Recovery Girl, you know, does a little bit of, you know, scolding All Might for going a little hard on them. Before, you know, basically being shipped off to go to the school, Deku says, hey, can I stick around here? I'd kind of like to see what's going on with all the other tests and stuff. And basically he's like, I am the audience. They want to see what the fuck is going on in the other tests right now. So she's like, okay, as long as, you know, you're feeling up to it. I mean, if you really don't need the rest, okay, but don't push yourself too hard, basically. All Might carries off Bakugo, and he's actually thinking to himself, All Might is like, oh, Deku, you're really gonna be something one day. And this guy, too, you know, Bakugo, because you sure do smile when up against a towering wall. So, yeah, I never really noticed that, but, like, they made a big deal, you know, Deku smiles when confronting his problems and stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, Bakugo smiles, too. It just looks way more sinister.
It just looks evil when he does it, so people don't appreciate it as much.
Right, so it's like, oh, yeah, they're a little bit more similar than you might think. So, Deku, you know, is like, it seems as though each of these guys have a different specialized assignment, Recovery Girl says. Yes. Most of the teams are obvious and easy to understand, but some of the assignments aren't so clear. For instance, Takayami and Asui, I mean, Ectoplasm's quirk, I mean, doesn't really seem the perfect foil for them, because he summons a bunch of clones and stuff. Or Deku is saying all this, and then Recovery Girl says, actually, it is the perfect foil, because Tokoyami, his specialty is fighting at a distance, but he can easily get overwhelmed, and so if he's forced into a short distance battle, he's really weak, and that's why Asui is paired up with him, is because she has this ability to stay calm under very difficult circumstances. She's a really good supporting hero, basically. And Deku remembers way back to that one invasion that the, you know, villains did in the middle of a test, where he's like, oh yeah, if it hadn't been for her staying calm, we would have never made it through that crisis.
A question. What is Tokoyami's power again?
He summons a shadow that fights for him.
Does the shadow have its own mind?
It talks to him, so... Okay. But he can command it, at the very least.
Okay.
So, Asui is kind of leading the way as they run away from Ectoplasm. They manage to reach close to the escape gate, but the main Ectoplasm is guarding it. And then he's like, all right, good job getting past all my clones, but here's a giant one. Ah!
That is terrifying, too. Like, I don't know why. I feel like this is something out of a video game or something, where you're in, like, a giant circular arena, and you look down, and you just see a giant mouth coming up from the ground at you. That is terrifying visually.
They actually get caught by it, too. And he kind of, like... They don't get swallowed. They kind of get stuck in its chest, basically. And Tokoyami's like, oh, he's so powerful! And his shadow's like, hey, I am, too! So, Tokoyami's like, oh, what if I send my shadow through the gate? That'll count. But Ectoplasm just, like, kicks him away. So that doesn't work. So, Asui says, okay, I've got an idea. Tokoyami, take this. I hope that you... But don't like, watches them doing this, because then Ectoplasm's gonna notice. And also, it's really gross. And she vomits something up. Tokoyami gives it to his shadow, which lunges towards Ectoplasm, and slaps the handcuffs on him. So, yeah, she swallowed the handcuffs, gave them to Tokoyami, and his shadow slapped them on Ectoplasm, which means they win, because they didn't need to beat him. They just needed to put the handcuffs on him. Mm-hmm. Very clever.
Yep. And it was a good use of both of them. They're like, Tokiyami's really powerful, but as we remained calm under pressure, it managed to get them the win. So, mm-hmm. very cool showcase for both those characters, and it's nice getting to see all these groups kind of get a little chance to exemplify what their best traits are. Beyond just their powers, they have more to them. It's kind of cool seeing it.
Right, and it only worked because of both of their abilities, because Asui was able to hide the handcuffs, and Tokoyami was able to slap them on from a distance. So. Mm-hmm. We then go to Ashido and Kaminari, who are up against Nezu, the principal, who...
is a hamster, and we've never known to this point what his ability was.
He is super intelligent, and... I guess it's implied that he was experimented on or something like that as a hamster or something along those lines, and so he enjoys doing the same thing to people. And when he gets excited, he drinks his coffee really enthusiastically and spills out his mouth.
Because, like, the recovery girl's talking about it, like, yeah, you know, he was toyed with the humans in the past, but it's nice to see him go all out. And it's fun to watch brainy villains in action. And it's just him with the wrecking ball he's using to destroy the city and slowly kills off all of their reactions. And, yeah, the whole time he's just like, and he's drinking tea that's just shooting everywhere because he's laughing maniacally so much.
And Deku's like, are they going to be okay? This thing's going to rough on them. Oh, yeah, he was toyed with by humans. It was nice to see him let, you know, out that aggression.
I like to think, the only thing that could have made it more perfect is in the panel, because he has one panel where he's operating the wrecking ball rather casually with the glass of tea. If he just had, like, a little tiny hard hat on, like he had prepared for it. It
like, not even perfect. Big enough to actually properly protect his
no,
head,
it's...
But,
it's,
like, it fits between his ears.
Yeah, like a very miniature hard hat.
Oh, God. Then we get to the pair that Present Mike is testing, Jiro and Koda, and Deku's like, oh, that makes sense, because their quirks revolve around sound, and Present Mike can just overwhelm them with his absurd voice.
I like her outfit. I don't know what it is about her... her costume, but I like the way it looks for some reason.
Is it like the flared collar, you think?
I think it's just like having that kind of like rock star look on a character.
Without like playing it up too much.
Yeah, like it's not like ridiculous or anything like that. Like it feels appropriate. I don't know, it seems like a cool outfit. Hmm.
So...
I guess you could never cosplay it though, because people are like, what are you, an aging musician? I'm like, no. I'm the sound girl from whatchamacallit.
Well, you gotta have the teardrop, tattoos.
It'd and, be the elongated ears, which is what.
Right, right. The cord style ear lobes.
Ear jacks, yeah.
And so she's like, "Oh, wait, I've got an idea. You can't command animals because of his voice overwhelming yours. But wait, you can control bugs, right?" And he still gets freaked out. And, like, every time she, like, kind of moves a little bit to move a bug on her hand towards him, he freaks out and runs away. And she's like, ah, so you're scared of bugs. And Prison Mike's like, for real? And shouts. Oh, God. But they manage to kind of tough it out. And Koda's like, yes, I can control bugs. Jiro uses her ear jack to smash open a rock that has all sorts of bugs underneath them. He toughs it out and manages to command them.
No, we're glossing over too much. I don't know who this guy was before, but it's a very sad moment where he's talking about all I've been doing is running around and hiding, and he has a flashback to his mom, who also looks like a monster, like has that kind of like weird and humanoid face like he does. And she's crying, she's hugging her son, she's like,
I'm so proud you got into UA! Oh,
I'm so proud of you! And he comments, he's like, yeah, I'm into my dream school, I've gotta make it work no matter what it takes. So he like talks to the button, this like kind of sad, like, hey guys, go for it! Like he has this whole like long speech he gives
him. He's like, we've gotta go plus ultra for this! And he's like, on the ground from the bugs, but he's shaking so much that the entire ground is quivering underneath him.
Well, I liked seeing this guy get a little context, because he was always just the background guy in the group. Like like in the classroom, needed to have somebody in the group to talk about or like to comment on something. It was usually like him or like one or two other people.
Right. So he manages to send bugs underground where they won't be overwhelmed by Present Mike's voice. They crawl up his legs and disable him. And Koda actually like picks up Jiro and carries her across the finish line, which I'm not sure exactly why he did that.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I guess he's faster, maybe. So maybe it was just a way to make sure they got out before he woke up. It did seem inappropriate, though. It felt like she could walk out. It's like she's hurt.
Maybe she's like, I'm lazy. Broken. I'm lazy. Carry me.
That would be a good joke if she's like, all right, I did that for you. Now carry me out.
Or maybe she's like, you did a good job, so you can carry me as a reward or some shit like that. I don't fucking know. It's kind of a weird thing.
She's like, I just spontaneously broke my legs. I Vince McMahon quadricep tore my way, my way out.
Well, she does have to balance herself out in order to resist the blast of President Mike's abilities. Maybe she's tired herself out from continuously using her abilities.
She did tear both of her quads, although Vince McMahon...
But anyway, so yeah, that's two different matches that we've seen the classmates pass, and a third one that we saw as well. So Deku is like, oh wow, yeah, they managed to win. You know, slowly but surely, they're all passing. Well, I guess I should have known the awesome students of UA would never give up. And Recovery Girl's like, well, he looks like he's got to be giving up. And Mineta is running away crying. I was like, how am I supposed to pass? Giant globs of tears coming out of his eyes. So that's where we leave off the chapter. But, yeah.
Now, we all hate Mineta, right? Like, we find him funny, but nobody really likes him because he's a weird pervert.
He's a weird pervert. The reasons we like him are not to do with his capabilities as a hero, basically.
So I guess this might be a chapter where... First and foremost, it's cool that we're actually seeing these fights. Like, I'm yes. really curious to see Uraraka's match. Mm-hmm. And I guess Ida also had a fight. I forget who he's teamed up with. One of the other girls, but I forget who, I feel like.
So yeah. Oh yeah, we've seen almost half of the fights conclude now.
Yeah. But I'm kind of curious to see. I guess maybe next week will be about Mineta and his fight with I think it's him and the tape guy against Midnight. So be kind of curious to see what happens on that, like how if they can win. like if this dude can redeem himself.
Right, well it's clear that these challenges have been designed in a way for certain people, either like certain people have excelled and so they're matched up with someone who will challenge them in a very specific way, or they're exploiting a certain weakness so that someone else who hasn't gotten a chance to shine can help them out and show what they have to do and so on and so forth. Mineta is not someone who has like particularly excelled at anything so far, so who knows exactly how his matchup is going to work. Yeah, I'm looking forward to some of this kind of stuff because, like, oh yeah, even just like if it's not anything particularly new, it's like we got a chapter focusing on, you know, Coda getting a chance to show his stuff and stuff like that. So yeah, like it.
Very good chapter, and as I said, it was the favorite chapter of the chat room this week. So it's got to be something. We need to make like a small trophy that goes to the.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I've got a special surprise, like an idea I have that I had today that I think we're gonna try it out and see. Maybe we'll add a little feature to the show.
Ooh, better than the questions from last week, which yes. suspiciously haven't returned this week.
Unquestionably, let's move on to One Piece chapter 806 at Right Flank Fortress.
Nick, I have a question about this chapter. How many times have you masturbated to an animal character before?
What the fuck is that?
I just wanted to be a creepy voice. It's the only question that seemed to get a lot of...
I've got a question for you. What the fuck is that?
Nicholas, I have a question for you. How often
you're done now.
Oh. So, goodbye, everybody.
Amazingly, that was like the least weird question from last week. So the Elephant Island is like bathing itself this week, you know, spraying water from its trunk and so on and so forth. And it's weird because, like, they have this little conversation about, oh, yeah, you know, everyone has adapted to having these flash floods periodically because the elephant has to, you know, bathe itself. And so
they
on.
Name him, too, because we notice it's Zhao, but, I forget her name. Doggy Lady calls Zunesa. Mm-hmm. So we know that the elephant actually has a name.
Yeah. That is what the island is called by the natives. And we cut around a little bit to people, like, reacting to the flash floods. For example, Kinemon and Kanjuro are riding on a new thing the Kanjuro summoned, which is a giant cat named Nikozemon. And also the monkey is with them. So does that mean that the monkey is the ninja they were talking about?
Yeah, they said that, I thought.
Well, they said that that's the noise that he makes. But so, yeah, I guess so. So that must mean then that he was a native of this place, I guess.
Presumably.
So yeah, Luffy is continually being bothered as Carrot and Dog Girl, whose name I haven't memorized yet, explained to him all this, the way the rain works and so on and so forth. Cut over to Usopp's group, and they're like, oh my god, the flash flood, and there are sharks in it, ah! And Robin's just like, oh, maybe the giant elephant was washing itself, and in her imagination there's like a rainbow as the elephant is like, oh,
she says a very bipolar personality.
And I'm not sure what she does with her hand there. Is she like pretending to pet it?
Possibly. She likes cute things.
Yeah. Usa manages to spot Luffy riding around with the other two who are with them, and he's like, oh, Mo! Oh, no! They're gonna eat him! Because Karen is, like, biting him on the ear and stuff. So, yeah. But, yeah. Really weird. So she has a flashback to someone, I guess, being, like, butchered while chained on this big old X thing.
Yeah, the torture device or whatever they noted being in town. It looks like a lion man of some kind, or maybe a dog man.
And then in this awkward moment, like, Luffy's like sucking his lip in, which I guess even he's like, oh, this is kind of weird.
He has some tact. Luffy, people say Luffy's never grown as a character. He has. He's developed the most moderate amount of tact possible.
Let's see here. They run into some mist, and they're like, oh, I guess, well, the Zoro's gang's nearby, and she's like, yes, well, they should be. Law then suddenly uses his shambles ability so that the entire group appears right in front of Luffy, and so on and so forth. Usopp then uses Zoro's body like a puppet master in order to pretend that Zoro is threatening them.
I guess Zoro doesn't even have anything to say about it. He's just like, eh, whatever.
Let's see here. The point I was like, oh, look, it's the fortress gate and the guards. And she's like, it's okay, let them in, and so on and so forth. So they go inside, and they immediately spot Nami, who is sleeping on this weird giant goat sheep thing. I guess a giant ram, I guess.
It's a sheep. So sheep can have horns.
Well, yeah, they're called rams if they're, like, male, right?
I thought sheep could also have horns.
I don't fucking know. So, she wakes up and is like, oh, they're here, and Chopper's like, Luffy and the others are finally here, and they're so happy, and so on and so forth.
This is a question to Derek, our female correspondent. I feel like that outfit would not be comfortable to wear at all, ever.
Well, it's Nami, though.
I know, but there's something about it. Could someone wear that? That's my question, I guess.
It seems like it's custom fitted for her, too, because, I mean, that is very ornate, like, party dress and stuff.
So. It is worth noting, though, that at least the same outfit essentially was given to Chopper as well, because he's also just wearing black with a shit ton of pearls. So I like to think that's
maybe
the outfit they
the
wear.
Pearls are something specifically for, like, some ritual thing. I don't know. Yeah. So they're like, oh, we have guests, you know, prepare the feast for our savior's friends. There's this giant forest full of people. It's kind of like the one elven village in Lord of the Rings, but with pineapples everywhere. And also ships sticking out of random places.
If I had continued the questions this week, the only thing I was going to ask is, Nick, would you live in a pineapple either above or below the sea?
Lives in a pineapple on top of the elephant. Animal people!
Oh, I thought it was going to be SpongeBob Mink Pants.
Ah. So, everyone's like, oh yeah, this looks nice. Everyone's here is so friendly and so on and so forth. Yeah. So, they're like, oh, Nami and Chopper here. This is so nice. And Nami rushes in to greet them, and he's like, we're so glad to see you guys. And Usopp's like, where are Sanji, Brook, and Momo? And Nami glomps Luffy. And she's crying, and she says, it's Sanji. And that's where the chapter ends, and it's going to be off next week, so ending on a weird little cliffhanger there. Chris, you actually, like, addressed people who were concerned about this ending, if I recall.
Yeah, like, I know some people have, like, tried to theorize that there's something very serious going on here, and there definitely could be, but I just want people to remember, back in the Fishman Island arc, Sanji dying of nosebleed blood loss was used as a cliffhanger as well, so It's very possible she could be crying and saying Sanji, and then it cuts away and he's fallen in love with a turtle woman or something. Like, it could be a thousand different things. So, I don't... It might not be anything, but no, who knows what it is. But don't get too concerned.
Maybe it's just, like, Sanji is actually a massive furry, and so much blood...
She's so ashamed of him.
And so much blood is being dedicated to his boner that he's going brain dead.
I don't like this idea, because it's terrifying me, and I've also... Oh, God, I don't even know if I should say it.
Okay, then.
He starts using double leg, but with his cosh. So he's just spinning around, lights it on fire, and beats people.
He's like, look, Zoro, I can try wheel now, too.
Oh, God.
I've got three legs now.
I'm also speaking with my heart, and by heart I mean cock. Oh, God. Oh, it's... Oh, we will never meet the queen like this, Nick. They're never gonna let us meet her like this.
For all you know, the queen is like Mae Young, and she's like, that's right.
She's like, I'm that big boy's cock. Like, wow, Miss Queen, you're on money. Please, contain
Miss
yourself.
Miss Queen,
you're on money. Keep it together.
Okay. Not the most eventful chapter of One Piece, honestly. More world building.
It's gonna be like this for a lot, though. Like, if you're waiting.
Remember,
for
this is how Dressrosa started off.
And Five Fishman Island and. Mm-hmm. Punk Hazard. Any new arc in One Piece is going to start with a long period of time committed to building the story.
So, that said, let's move on to Toriko. Gourmet 346 to the Golden Cookware. So, last time, Komatsu was like, you don't need to run people ragged making air. Look, bam!
I'm awesome.
So, a number of the people... who were like, what were they called? The 10 shell chefs, I guess?
The 5 shell chefs, I think.
Anyway, they're like, oh yeah, he did a damn good job. I had no idea air could be prepared this way. It's really good. And Gigi approaches them and is like, ah, Komatsu passed, so who else will we take to the spirit world? The result of the cook-off was 2-2, an even split. And we get a breakdown of how the matches went.
Yuta won his match by murder.
By murder. And the other one to win their match was actually Nono, Setsuna's apprentice. So, interesting.
Yeah, she's the only other character who seems to have gotten any kind of real emphasis beyond this. I vaguely remember that the second guy on the list is the oil master, but I don't even remember what the third guy is. I just know him as the chef who has a robot eye.
And also, Chiru's match was never settled. But they also give them credit as, like, we were able to use the warp kitchen, and also... We could use food souls. We had all the fucking advantage in terms of raw skill. They're way above us, probably.
I like how they handled last one. They're like, well, Asagi and Chiru's match was never settled. But we could probably assume that they have similar capacity. So it'd been like, oh, like a Bosch, like a tie. Like, you fucks.
Fuck you guys. Yeah, and so they're like, okay, right. And then Gigi is like, we'll bring all of them. The more chefs, the better. But we don't have enough golden cookware. Okay. So, Komatsu, I guess...
I feel like a character needed to show up like, what's the golden cookware? And he's like, well,
Billy.
As he takes him on a magic carpet ride across all these, like, horrifying monsters.
I can show you cookware.
If you kill this massive monster shark, you can use its tooth to make a knife. I don't like this tour anymore. We've got 6 more, so you better fucking like it.
Are we gonna spend chapters and chapters fighting these monsters to use their organs to make golden cookware?
Well, we abandoned the 8 Kings stuff really fast, didn't we?
We might show you the shark, and who cares about the rest?
So, Komatsu apparently has been escorted to all the other chefs, and they're like, oh, it's nice to see you, and so on and so forth. Then Gigi and the other 8 shell chefs or whatever... The 8.5 shell chefs are like, did you come to understand the back channel and its necessity? And Komatsu's like, oh, you're the 5-10 shell masters! Can I have your autographs? And Gigi's like, I thought you would say that, Komatsu, so I already got them for you. And Komatsu's like, you just wrote those yourself, Chef Gigi. I was hoping for your autograph too, that's why I say it's okay. It's a weird, like, little joke, though. It's like, oh, I need your autographs. I anticipated that you this and got them for you, but you just wrote them yourself.
I like that joke. I wish he hadn't continued with, like, though I was hoping for your autograph, too. I feel like it would just be funny if it's like, oh, this dude's just an asshole. It's like, let's just curb this wacky gimmick
beforehand.
Well, especially
because he was just having a conversation with the 10 Shell Chefs, and he could have gotten their autographs.
He's just like, oh, fucking, we don't have time for this.
Like, he knew this was going to happen and prepared this instead of just asking them for their autographs. Oh, God. So, yeah, the 10 Shell Chefs are like, yes, that is the other... They're like, we know that you're sacrificing the lives of the slum residents. And he's like, yes, that is how the recipe goes, for God. And they're like, but is it possible to, you know, do something other than use the humans as fertilizer and so on and so forth and so on and so on and so on? Because, like, Kaka and Gigi came up with that recipe. But there is another chef that was able to prepare God without sacrificing lives. And Gigi says, yes, there was only one who could do it, and that was the God Chef Froze. And so Komatsu reacts to this by saying, well, that means it can be done. People don't have to be sacrificed. And Gigi says, ah, yes, but it's by a method that not even we taste hermits nor the Blue Nitro know, and it requires a great amount of physical stamina. If prepared solo, your life will be sucked dry at once, leading to death.
Fair enough.
And Chin Chin Chin.
Chin Chin Chin.
Says, can I use Food's End? If I could replenish enough of my caloric energy, I could take the place of several hundred people's worth of fertilizer. And they're like, yes, we'll help you however we can, and so on and so forth. And there are some people like, and I'll become fertilizer if you need it. And Rin is like, me too! Actually, no, I can't do the dying part. There's some good jokes.
Well, nothing bad happens to Match. I like Match.
I like how non-committal Match is about dying, and Rin's like, yeah, and I'll do it too! Actually, no, I can't die.
I want to get married.
There were two really good jokes in this chapter, I have to admit. But then Gigi says, you know, there is something that we need to do in order to prepare another, because one of the Ten Shosha says, oh, but we would need 600,000 years to do it. But what we'd use for that is the spirit world. In the spirit world, where time passes at a rate of almost zero, we can greatly cut down the cooking time. But that leaves us with the current problem of tools. There are no pots or knives that can withstand being used for tens of thousands of years straight. No matter how splendid the tool, over time, it will wear down and warp. The only tools you can use in there are golden cookware. Golden cookware? What's that?
Well, get on this magic carpet and I'll show you more monsters!
And Yuji just says, ah, the seven tools sent to fillet food sauce. What a weird series this is.
And there's one person at some point be like, hey, didn't you murder that dude? Because you notice, like, during that scene, no one comments on it. Maybe we see that chef at one point, you're like, oh, he's not dead. I don't remember what Condor Window even looked like anymore. But I just want one person to be like, well, we gauged the two teams against each other. Yuna did murder a guy, but I guess that means he wins. Like, no one's commenting. Like, he did kill one of them. I guess he must be alive. Because if the furry guy, I forget his name, got his autograph, then I get, or faked it, then I have to assume that he survived in some way. But it really, like, no one seems to comment. Like, he really did look like he murdered him.
Gigi says, yes, and we must gather raw materials to prepare golden cookware for this. And Komatsu's like, where can we find the raw materials? And Gigi says, ah, it will be a tough ordeal, for they come from the fearsome creatures called the Seven Beasts, which I will name over the course of a 2-page spread. We're totally going on a super long adventure in order to gather these things. No, you're not. There is no way in hell we're dedicating chapters and chapters to gathering these fucking materials if you skipped out on the fucking Eight Kings stuff you were doing. Not the Eight Kings, the Eight fucking Guardian. The Eight Giant Monster Beasts.
Yeah. It's also interesting that one of the items is an apron.
Yeah.
I guess that's...
You don't want to be burned.
Yeah, it's like, it's the only thing to protect against the Emperor Bacon Grease from destroying your nipples. If a single speck of grease gets on you, it will devour your entire being.
Does that mean that when we go there, all of our other clothes will disintegrate?
Yes. Maybe. So let's send all the women. You're like, you mean the four in this whole series?
Yes, all of them. And Rin's like, but I can't cook. Get in there! Okay. So, they're like, we will send the gourmet knights. We'll get them. Okay.
I'm like, thank God you guys are here.
And Gigi's like, oh, what a dependable team. Then we cut away to the Food Spirit Gate, where Don Slime is speaking with Enma, and Enma says, there's no mistake about it. Neo is on the brink of reviving as we speak. We must hurry. Yeah, we already knew that.
Also, Enma has like 8 octopus arms.
Right, but also a beard.
That's creepy.
It's weird. And it's such a weird thing. It's like, we've got to go on this super awesome journey in order to gather these things. Well, we've already seen the result of that journey already. It's like, it's a little weird, you know? I understood what was going on in this chapter far better than the last few, though. But again, it's just like, yeah, we know what happens, so...
It was okay, let's get to World Trigger.
World Trigger. Chapter 121,
Who cares, Nick? Let's get to the end of the chapter!
Galapaula. So, Husei has a little map, and he realizes, it and Radokoron are approaching Midin. So if those back home use their influence, But then there's a knock at the door, so he quickly hides the holographic projector that he was using for this, and he, like, sticks it behind his ear. So, Yotaro comes in, and he's like, what are you up to? I was just thinking. He flops down the bed, and he's like, you'll get to go home one day. And Husei's kind of shocked by this, and he's like,
I kind of like that little touch, though.
Yeah, it's like, I know what you're thinking about. So it shows that despite the fact that they kind of don't get along, but they also have been to the people at the space who have actually spent a lot of time together, weirdly enough.
And it's also just the fact that Yotaro's not, like, he's an annoying character, but he's, you know, he's a good character. He's a good kid, you know? Mm-hmm.
And he's like, want to pet Raijin Maru's tummy? It'll make you feel better.
I want to know if Ashihara also had
like a capybara,
like a transcendental experience seeing a capybara at some point, because I can't comprehend somebody who's ever like just spontaneously seen one being like, I do not want to pet that thing's belly. Does it make noise? Like, well, it farts a lot while you pet it.
Speak!
like this isn't cute at all. I hate this.
Imagine like that scene where Yotaro got really pissed off and would like try to ride Raijin Maru into battle. If instead of just standing there and not following his orders, it was just like, go Raijin Maru, scrapped all over the floor.
You're like, oh, this is why no one likes capybaras. How are your things not extinct yet? Oh, because no one needs you for anything, so they just let you hang around. You're like the Catherine Heigl of the animal world.
They think they're so pathetic that some people just have to give you all the antibiotics and adopt you. So we cut to the Galapaula group that we introduced to at the end of the last chapter, and their scar-faced leader is kind of recapping stuff, giving them information, and he says that their orders from Aftokrator are specifically to stall Midin to deliver a blow so that they cannot go after Aftokrator. But they get to decide what to do, exactly how to do that. So he says, so we're going to specifically attack the Midin base. And so some people are like, well, does that mean... So we're not going to attack the city? You mean we're not going to actually go after their trigger users? And he says, no, we're just going for their base. We're not going to try and capture people. We're not going to try and take out any soldiers. We're just going to try and do a pure sabotage job. And so the captain, his name is Gatlin, he's, you know, like... Look, if we target Mian citizens, they're going to focus on our country. Very smart. So it's just like, yeah, so we're just going to do... Basically, we're going to do what they told us to do, but we're going to minimize damage to ourselves while doing it.
He's like, we can't... You know, we can't disobey them, but we don't want to make ourselves their direct target because we don't have the defenses they do, or, you know, Aftokrator does, and we're a lot closer, so they will go for us first.
So we're going to do as much as we can to not make ourselves a new enemy. So, yeah, that's what they're gonna do, and then they get word from Brabra, sorry. Rhodochrone. First of all, they've got information about Meaden that they got from Atokator, but there's a lot of unknowns, obviously, because they're like, we think that they have one Black Trigger, but they might have as many as three. I don't know.
God damn it, that's a really big discrepancy.
Well, and I mean, I think that Border has more than that. But yeah,
we only know of two. We know Ambo has one, and we know that they have Fujin somewhere. And then, obviously, Yuma has his, but his is basically locked down. But there could be more beyond that. We just haven't heard of them.
So, they're like, okay, well, let's see. There's six of us, and we've got some Trans soldiers in stock, but I don't know what we're going to do. And then they get word from Rhodochrone. They're like, yeah, it says they're going to send 200 dogs and 95 Idris, so okay, that's fine. Yeah, we might be able to pull this off now. But it's interesting because it's just like, it's this kind of very small, tight-knit group that is planning on doing this, as opposed to the giant invasion specifically that Atokator launched. So nice.
It's kind of cool seeing it's a small group too. I mean, it's not like the last group had that many more. I mean, it was like, what, six people in total, and then a lot of robots, and that's sort of the same situation here. But I guess it's knowing that these guys aren't technically aligned with the robots that are coming in, the machines, mm-hmm. that they're just in the same alliance. I don't know, it just gives this group a smaller, quainter feeling. So I don't hate them or anything like that, because it really does seem like they're just a group who are in a bad situation. Like, they're, we are the world we are. We're under Atokator. We can't go against their word, but we're not, we're looking out for our best interests. Like, they haven't presented themselves as, like, an antagonist. You'd be like, oh, I hate these guys. It's almost kind of like, oh, I hope nothing bad happens for them.
Hmm. All right. Yuma is walking through hallways and stuff. And he has gotten lost up until he comes across Kakizaki, who is one of his opponents in the Next Rank Wars match. So they talk for a little bit, and it's like Yuma doesn't actually know who Kakizaki is. And so he like leads into the elevator, and he's like, thanks, whoever you are. Dude, seriously?
It's like, no, not cool, man.
But then suddenly they are approached by Kako, the girl who was on commentary in the last match. And she says, oh, it's nice to meet you, Kuga. And she introduces herself and so on and so forth. And so she says, I'm glad you're here because now I don't have to go to Tamakoma. And then she just says immediately, do you want to join my squad? And Kaki-Saki's like, what the fuck? But Yuma's just like, I decline.
I don't like butterflies.
Kako says, that's what I thought you'd say. Like, I like how, I mean, we make jokes about the duck face and stuff, but it works because, like, this is a comedic moment, but also a character building moment. Uh-huh. Yuma doesn't have to think about it. It's not that he was recruited and, after some, tension or whatever, it was like, oh, they're going to recruit Yuma. Is he going to leave the group? And then at the end he leaves. It's just like, he hears about it and immediately like, no.
Yeah, I got my group.
Yeah. But I also like that Kako is like, yeah, I figured you'd say that. So.
Yeah, they're also the group that only has two members as well. I feel like Kako's just those two girls. Maybe there's a third one.
That we've seen so far.
I think so.
So then we cut to the Arashiyama Squad strategy room where Osamu is.
Giving them food! He's saying, like, thanks, guys.
Yeah, here, I got you some stuff. Their operator says, Arashiyama isn't actually back from the meeting yet. And I guess we actually saw him there. Kitara kind of walks out of the room because she says she's going to go make tea. Because, those Japanese and their politeness customs. And, Double Sniper Guy. I forget his name.
It's not Double Sniper Guy.
It is not Double Sniper Guy. Yeah, this is the critical guy.
Oh, fuck, what's his name? I want to call him Koneda, but I think that's the other one. I'm blessed. Tokeda, that's it.
Takeda is like, it's too bad that you guys lost yesterday. And someone's like, yeah, after all you guys taught me and so on and so forth. And Takeda says, did you learn something from your loss? And Osama says, I just became painfully aware that what you said was right. This isn't something to be learned overnight, but I was obsessed with scoring points myself. I ended up making things worse for Kuga and Chika, so I'm going to continue my shooter practice, but next time we're going to develop more concrete team tactics. Although I don't really know what I can really do at this point. So Tagea says, well, actually, Chris, it might be faster for you to learn from Kitora. Ooh. And because he explains, Kitora knows a fighting style that's right for you because she's the same as you. She had a hard time because she didn't have much try on. And that's where the chapter ends.
Nick, I want to bring back the questions for just once this week.
Okay, okay.
Have you ever had a dream come true?
This is, I mean...
It's like this chapter was written for me, Nick!
I don't have the exact same interest as you in terms of...
Then shut the fuck up and let me talk about Kisamu, Nick! It's happening right in front of us!
Well, I mean, I always enjoy those bits where, like, the character that was alluded to being important early on, but then nothing happened with them, finally gets that chance where it's like, oh, you know, they are important and they are going to be playing a role. Like, I went on that big thing. It's like, oh, you know, Irina was made a big deal of early on, then she hasn't really done much. Now she's this central part of this arc. And it's similar to that now where it's just like, oh, we're finally going to learn a bit more about Kitora after she was... I mean, she was like the third important character introduced. She showed up before Chika.
Yeah, she was essentially the character... She was in, what, I think the third chapter, fourth chapter she got introduced. So she was like that major character. She was the first official border agent we really saw. And became the face of kind of like that group for a while. Because mm-hmm. they were the ones they always used, the one they went to. And it's kind of interesting. I know a lot of people have been kind of wondering what this implies. Because we've, for the longest time, been told Kitora is one of the better character or better attackers. I guess she's, yeah, she's a, what is she called? An all-arounder, I guess, because she used both combat and rifles, like both of them. But we know that she's very good. When they did that one part when Yuma was doing the practice, they noted what her time was, and it was one of the fastest times. We've been told that she's a character who's been very good before, but this also implies that she doesn't have a lot of try-on. So it's a question of, like, oh, I wonder how that all kind of comes into play. And also adds a lot more context into some of the very, like snide comments she kind of threw during Osamu's training, where, like, she'd had a line like, train, you don't catch up with people like that overnight.
Right. Or things like that. So presumably that means now it's like she has worked herself to the bone in order to be where she is.
She's still like saying that about herself, too.
Ooh, being really hard on herself.
Yeah. We know that she's a character who is hard on herself, but she also... And she loves it when she gets praises from her superiors or seniors. Mm-hmm. So it's adding a lot of context to this character that I'm really kind of feeling like adds in a little bit about this character. And I'm like, oh, I need to see where this goes, basically. Like, I need to find out. I mean, first and foremost, though, it's like this chapter was written. It's like they're saying, like, well, the two of you are so similar, you might as well just start banging furiously in a poorly written fan fiction. I feel like Ashihara can't ever officially say, he can't actually go out and say, I support fan-written erotic fan fiction in a language I don't believe I actually speak, but this is his way of throwing it out to, like, Chris, keep doing it. I like what you're doing. I like these fan fictions. I'm going to keep supporting it unconsciously through the series. So, Nick, with that, I can announce next month will be part four of A World Trigger to My Heart and Backdoor.
And you're going to have all sorts of extra material now that you know they're going to probably train together.
The ship is happening, Nick. You can get on board. It's leaving port. You just want to get on this ship now while you still have the chance. Because you know what they're serving, Nick? Dreams. Dreams are what they're serving on that ship.
Wet dreams.
Wet dreams as well.
Which is appropriate for a ship. Oh, God. That is going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap. So it's time to now discuss this little addition I kind of want to make to the show, which is Series of the Week and Weekly MVP. Two things. Chris, the first one's going to be very simple for you. What was your favorite series this week?
Okay. You're asking me right now?
Yeah.
World Trigger.
World Trigger.
I liked World... For me, it's World Trigger. I can't not have my ship get pushed this hard and not... Yeah. I'm also, Nick, I'm thinking I'm going to retire from shipping after this because I feel like I have my one.
You only got the one in.
And
you.
I'm gonna. It's like being a Giants fan.
You're gonna retire 1-0.
Yeah. It's like being a Giants fan. I can't. My heart can't take it so much anymore. So I'm just gonna. I'm gonna bow out here.
My favorite series this week was Food Wars, but, I mean, it's been Food Wars for a while. It's just got so much momentum emotionally for me that it's going to, I think it's going to be a little hard to break that streak because it's been my favorite series for a while. But anyway, I'm going to be keeping track of not only this, but also a little something for, you know, like the sports fan in me, which is Weekly MVP, which is what was a character, one character that you thought did a really good job entertaining you or really stood out to you by way of some sort of some form of character development or just by being really cool or something like that. And, you know, just to be something like, oh, yeah, this was a big highlight for me, basically. So I'm actually going to be keeping track of this week to week. When we have it next week, then I'll like post to like a Google Doc that has like our series of the week running, and then like so then at the end of the year from now on we'll be like, oh, you know, this was my favorite series overall, and then we can look at this and be like, oh, well, does that match what it was week to week, and so on and so forth.
I almost feel like to add on to that, I mean, it was something I was kind of contemplating doing anyway, but if we do make the move to Hitbox and I can put up that poll every week, we could also always take in what the audience is
right, and
was as well.
And I have I also have slots here for like a guest choices as well for if we have guests on the show. But yeah, that's a great idea, and it did occur to me when we decided we were going to be doing Hitbox this.
All right. Well, maybe we'll give that a shot. Well, it's
So My Hero Academia was the audience series of the week. We can't really do like audience MVP because I'm not going to do every character
like
every
four.
Character who appear in every series. I'm not going to put that in a poll. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, but having their the number one thing, it also helps as a good way to gauge where the audience was in comparison to what we thought were the best chapters, and then what
yes,
that was
that's
overall.
I mean, yeah, I think that is. Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
So now it's an idea we came up with together. My weekly MVP. I'm gonna give recognition to someone who surprised me, which was Yuno, Black Clover, because he did something I liked for probably the first time ever. I liked the little thing where he had that kind of friendly put-down of Asta, and like I said, I really like having that thing that helps him stand out from the rest of the cast, where he can be a big admirer of Asta and someone who respects him, but not necessarily be like, oh, Asta is great. He can put him down a little bit for now and then.
Alright. Well, I can't.
I understand I kind of caught you off guard with this.
Well, I did. I've been considering it since you mentioned it, and I think I have somebody worse. I'm not picking Kitora, shockingly, but that's because
well, she didn't really do anything in this chapter.
This is just we heard about it, so nothing happened thus far. So I'm actually going to give it to Kochi from My Hero Academia, the bug-talking guy, because it was a character I thought, I was like, this is just a background dude. And when you gave him a little bit of context, I'm like, oh, okay, this character could be more interesting now. So I was actually pleasantly surprised by that.
All right, yeah, I like that. So a couple of
it's going to be his one vote, his one MVP vote all year round.
Well, probably. I mean, you know, because he is a background character. But yeah, I like that. I like that it's not so much MVP, so much as Dark Horse or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, good stuff. Let's wrap up the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the podcast we record. Well, I guess we might just move to hitbox.tv/RealTT from now on. I mean, to stay updated on that, though, we record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Sometimes we do need to change things up. So to stay updated, follow at RealOT and at YRulerOfTime, as well as the official Weekly Manga Recast Twitter Twitter account, which is at WMRPodcast, all one word. Also, be sure to check out past episodes on Weekly Manga Recap at podbean.com, and you can subscribe to us on iTunes, and also leave a comment and rating so that we can beat the woodworking podcasts.
Someone has to do it. We didn't get any this week, though. We got three in the last week. I was super happy.
Well, yeah, we kind of ragged on our fans for a little bit until like a whole bunch of people God, shut up about begging for comments.
I'm like, that's what I have to do now. I have to start shitting on you guys again. I'm like, listen here, assholes. You want the woodworkers to win? Because that's how communism gets back in this country. That's a mic being dropped. It was a chapstick, but it was a mic in my mind.
You want to send us feedback, offer criticism, or you know, offer your own thoughts on the chapters week to week. Also, ask us questions for us to answer on a future Q&A edition of the show. Suggest manga for us to read in the future. You can send those all to us via our email account, which is weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Special thanks go out to all of our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. Last week, we had our monthly Q&A episode. This coming weekend, we will be doing a live movie commentary on... It's official, right? We are going to do it.
Yes.
On the Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie.
It's like, I'm like, one, two, three. You start saying Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm like, War Horse. Wait, shit.
The Four Kids produced Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie that came out...
Pyramid of Light, I believe it's called.
Yes, Yu-Gi-Oh! The Pyramid of Light. I have wonderful memories about that movie, because it's terrible.
I have not seen it.
It is fucking amazing. My sister and I went to see it when it came out in theaters. We both laughed our asses off at it. So that is coming, and I'll give you guys a chance to track down... a version of it, or your DVD, or whatever, so you can watch it alongside us as we comment on it live.
What day are we doing that? Do we
I think Sunday.
Sunday? So like Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, something like that?
When is the Giants game?
I'm not picking when the Giants... It's fine, whenever it goes.
Right.
Yeah. You want to give a time, though, while people are listening. Like, say, like, I don't know, 6 on Sunday? 5?
5 o'clock, I think, should be good.
All right, 5 o'clock on Sunday, then, and... I guess it'll be...
Eastern time.
Yeah, but I guess it'll be here? I don't know.
Whatever.
Yeah, it'll be in one of the two. Either twitch.tv/royalty or twitbox.tv/royalty.
So long as people know when to clear their schedules and so on and so forth. Special thanks also go out to Steve Mann, our title card artist. You can check out his work at many places, such as patreon.com/SteveMann, idropboobs.tumblr.com, neuroticfanboy on DeviantArt, and so on, so on, so on, so many places. Also thanks to Felix Stark for the visual editions of our podcast, and also thanks to... You're that T-H-E. Oh, no, wait, you're British. T-H-E. Infamous Planet.
Just call him a big fat sack of shit. Hey, fatty, how's that $200 spaceman food?
For the visual editions of our podcast, those are awesome. And also, by the way, Infamous Planet, I do look forward to playing Rocket League again with you. That was fun. Yeah, hopefully next week we'll be ready to talk about Great Teacher Onizuka. It's a big series, very long and dense, but hopefully we'll be ready for it, because I know a lot of people were asking for us to do it. And yeah, that's going to do the show.
Well, real quick though, got to give thanks to our new patrons, by the way, to Damon Ward, Ryan Scott.
Oh, I didn't let you get time for it. Oh, yeah.
And Dragon Trainer. So Damon Ward, Ryan Scott, and Dragon Trainer, thank you very much for supporting us. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, you guys. Yeah. I'm sorry, we were too busy talking about the movie. I forgot you didn't have a chance to plug this, guys.
It's all good.
All right.
We've gotten it, and the future looks bright for Weekly Manga Recap, I believe, Nick. We've got a new element to the show, a new, new aspect, new home, perhaps. But I feel like we can do a lot with this. I think there's aspects to Hitbox that are going to be good at enhancing the show in some way.
And also, there's less downtime, it seems like.
Well, yeah, the delay is severely shorter. And so if you're listening now, actually, I'll say that for afterwards, until the podcast is over, because we're still recording. We haven't,
stopped yet.
We haven't done anything wacky to end it, though.
It's never going to stop, Chris.
Well, Nick, no, I can't spoil that.
Oh, no.
There's a very amusing end to the latest episode of Super Hilarious Brothers podcast of my dad. Okay, I'll spoil it. My dad accidentally farts into the mic, so I feel like we need to beat that.
Into the mic?
Yeah, well, he farts once, and my sister kicks him off the bed, and he falls, and while he's standing up, he farts into the mic again. So I feel like we need to do something on that level to close this out.
I can't fart at will.
Oh, I feel like this is why the woodworkers keep beating us, Nick. They can fart on a dime.
A dime that they carve with their woodworking skills.
What a dime.
Yes, dime made of wood in this analogy.